Rest of your headlines. Iran says Osama bin Laden died of illness a long time before the U.S. raid in Pakistan. Bahrain's king pledges to end emergency rule as the crackdown on the opposition continues. In Yemen, regime forces use live rounds against protesters, killing at least four people. Tunisia's premier says his interim government may postpone the elections scheduled for July. Seven 7:30 in the morning here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Welcome to Press TV World News. Now, beginning with the top story, Iran's intelligence minister says there are documents proving that al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden had already died of a disease. Haider Moslay dismissed the U.S.'s claim that it killed bin Laden in an operation in Pakistan. He says if Washington is really telling the truth, why did it refuse to show bin Laden's body? Last week, U.S. President Barack Obama announced that al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden was killed in a compound in Abbottabad in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. But the U.S. intelligence announced shortly afterwards that his body was buried at sea for security reasons. Earlier, we were joined by former Assistant Secretary of U.S. Treasury Paul Craig Roberts. He says the whole scenario of bin Laden's death has been orchestrated by the U.S. government.
It's well known in the American intelligence community that bin Laden died in 2001. He's been dead since December of 2001, almost a decade. That is probably the reason there have not been any further major terrorist operations from the so-called terror mastermind. Fox News, which is an American neoconservative, very, very conservative, very patriotic media station, reported in December of 2001 that the Taliban had announced that bin Laden had died.
Angry Pakistanis have taken to the streets of Islamabad to condemn the assassination of Osama bin Laden by U.S. Special Forces. Our correspondent has more.
These demonstrations were triggered by the U.S. forces raid deep inside Pakistan last Monday.
Violation of the country's sovereignty by the U.S. forces has provoked angry street protests.
The protest, organized by the Pakistan's main religious party, the Jamaat-e-Islami, not only condemned the U.S., but its collaborators.
President must resign, Chief of Army must be terminated, and Prime Minister must resign, and nation must unite to defeat such events.
It is rare in Pakistan that the right-wing parties take such a strong position against the powerful military. Many opposition parties have also demanded that the country's top leadership must step down over the bin Laden debacle.
As long as a government is considered a hired gun of the US, getting money every month, salaries to fight someone else's war, it completely diminishes its capability to fight terrorism. Pakistan really needs to change courses. It needs to have a credible government through free and fair elections, which is a sovereign government.
Anti-American sentiments are already running high in the country over the U.S. drone strikes in the tribal areas.
The best option with us is to immediately withdraw our support to the war on terror, so-called war on terrorism, and we should immediately de-link ourselves from this war, and we should protect our sovereignty.
Facing pressure at home and abroad, the government says Prime Minister Yusuf Raza Gilani will speak in the parliament on Monday.
USA!
Kamran Yusuf, Press TV, Islamabad.
The Saudi-backed crackdown in Bahrain continues. Authorities have cut off electricity to Sitra Island after troops surrounded several villages there. The Bahraini king has set a timetable to end emergency rule on June the 1st. Analysts say the move is a bit to show that Saudi-backed regime forces have managed to silence the opposition. Meanwhile, human rights groups have denounced the massive clampdown on opposition activists seeking greater rights and freedoms. Dozens have been killed since anti-government protests began in February. In Libya, revolutionaries are asking for, quote, game-changing weapons to help them defeat troops loyal to the country's ruler, Muammar Gaddafi. The revolutionaries have warned that the besieged city of Misrata could soon run out of food and water if they're not provided with appropriate weapons. Revolutionary forces say their light arms are not enough to counter the tanks and artillery that Gaddafi loyalists are using to try to capture Misrata. The Libyan opposition has repeatedly called on the West to provide it with weapons. In Yemen, at least four people have been killed in fresh crackdown on anti-regime protesters. Security forces opened fire on teachers demonstrating against the regime in Taiz. Three people were killed. In Hodeidah, pro-government thugs attacked protesters, killing one person and injuring six others. The protesters were calling for the ouster of President Ali Abdullah Saleh. The political crisis deepened in the country after Saleh refused to sign a deal proposed by the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. Yemen's opposition has given Saleh 2 days to agree with the plan. The GCC plan proposes the formation of a national unity government and Saleh's resignation within 30 days. However, the anti-government protesters are angry with the deal because it gives Saleh immunity from prosecution. Tunisia's prime minister has suggested that the elections scheduled for July could be delayed. Beji Caid Sepsi raised the possibility of a delay because of what he called technical reasons. Voters are slated to elect an assembly tasked with drawing up a new constitution on July 24th. The interim government still has to set up a promised independent electoral body ahead of the ballot. The suggestion of a delay in the vote could stir up tension in the country, which is already in turmoil. Many Tunisians are skeptical about the interim administration's promises that it will work towards democracy. This comes as authorities announce another nightly curfew following a 4-day of protests in the capital, Tunis.
There has been a growing conflict between local residents and the police in some parts of the capital following the protests that had taken place in central Tunis over the past few days. In El Mourouj, one of Tunis's suburbs, the local police station was burned down. Amidst the conflict in the area, gunshots were heard after a fire broke out in a police station from an alleged attack of Molotov cocktails.
Police shouldn't use tear gas to disperse crowds in residential areas. People should be allowed to protest and journalists should be allowed to report on these events.
Recently, the police's heavy-handed conduct on protesters and journalists has caused vast controversy amongst the public and in the media, and Sunday's protest was no different. Many Tunisians said this police brutality is reminiscent of police operations during Ben Ali's regime. However, the police had felt it is necessary as they did not think many of the protesters were genuinely present for political reasons.
Some people have no political aspirations and only join the protest to stir violence. A case in point could be the arson attack on the Mourouj police station.
The igniting factor of the protests in the last 3 days had followed the recent comments by the ex-minister of Interior, Farhat Rajhi. His comments were mostly regarding the interim government's unwillingness to open the Ministry of Interior to public scrutiny and the possibility of a military coup if the main Islamist opposition party in Tunisia, Al-Nahda, was to win a substantial number of seats in the July elections. Protesters in Sunday's protests had highlighted that the interim military government's track record in dealing with the key demands of January 14th revolution is not encouraging.
People are not happy with the present situation, and that's why they are on the streets. The interim government has failed to deliver on its promises.
Following Farhat Rajhi's comments, there is a sign of dissatisfaction among Tunisians that the interim government had hijacked the revolution. In a recent interview with the Tunisia radio station, Rajhi has said that his comments were hypothetical. Many Tunisians still seem to believe that there's some degree of truth in his comments. However, the recent protests in central Tunis have shown that they're not about to die down. Amin Al-Khatib, Press TV, Tunis.
It's almost 7:40 a.m., time for a recap of the news headlines. Iran says Osama bin Laden died of illness a long time before the U.S. raid in Pakistan. Bahrain's king pledges to end emergency rule as the crackdown on the opposition continues. In Yemen, regime forces use live rounds against protesters, killing at least 4 people. And Tunisia's premier says his interim government may postpone the elections scheduled for July. Still to come in the second half of this bulletin, riots in Australia's refugee detention centers and much more.
An African once told me he had inherited a river in Equatorial Guinea. He hadn't seen it, nor thought he'd ever go back to his land. I then wanted to see his river and reconstruct his past.
Hacia la mitad del siglo XIX empieza la colonización española en Fernando Po.
Es emocionante comprobar el poder de penetración de nuestras costumbres y de nuestro credo, y sinceramente sorprende contemplar reproducidas en este ambiente exótico las mismas escenas que todos conocemos de nuestro.
The wise African said that when the whites arrived, we had the land, and they had the Bible. The whites taught us to pray with our eyes closed. When we opened them, they had the land, and we had the Bible.
On a minibus, early in the day, 6 military personnel, including 3 officers, were also killed in Homs. Meanwhile, the Syrian army has continued to pursue militant groups in the suburbs of the southern city of Deraa and the coastal city of Banias. The army says it has arrested dozens of terrorists and seized large quantities of sophisticated weapons.
After leaving the southern city of Daraa, where the protests erupted 7 weeks ago, units of the Syrian army continued chasing the remnants of armed groups in villages around the city and arrested dozens of terrorists in their operation.
But we have to understand the main reason behind this kind of development, to understand the main reason. We have to understand that there is weapons, there is traitors, there is terrorists.
In the recent developments, Syrian troops and tanks have entered the city of Banias to pursue armed terrorist elements. The Syrian TV aired what it called confessions made by terrorists, in which they arrested people's head. They received support and money from the outside of the country.
A Saudi man called Saud Otebi briefed me on his scheme. He allured me by saying that we are planning to destroy the Syrian regime because it fights the religion and the religious man.
Over the last 2 days, 11 security forces have been killed during clashes with militant groups. Syrian Al-Watan Daily quoted a Syrian military source as saying that militant groups in the city of Banias used heavy weapons against the army.
My message to our army and to our people, we have to respect our army and we have to respect the security in Syria.
Syria witnessed weeks of protests. The protesters left scores killed, including security forces and civilians. The Syrian authorities have blamed terrorist elements and militant groups for the killings.
The Syrian authorities say that preserving the country's security and stability is on the top of their priorities in the current stage. But on the other hand, they say they are determined to go ahead with reforms in response to public demands. Khaldun Al-Riri, Press TV, Damascus.
In Algeria, opposition parties have been urged to back the government's proposed reforms. Here's more on that story.
Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's proposed political reforms have received little support from independent media and the opposition, who claim he failed to meet calls for real change. But Moussa Touati, the head of the Algerian National Front, has chaired a meeting to urge the opposition to back the president's proposed reforms.
People are no longer willing to sacrifice their lives because they have no idea about the opposition's agenda.
Maqri Abdul Razzaq, member of the Movement of Peaceful Society, has also urged the opposition to support the reforms.
The constitution is outdated and must be amended to meet public demands and avoid a possible Libyan scenario.
The current constitution, adopted in 1996, was introduced to strengthen presidential law and ban religion-based parties following Algeria's murderous war between the military and Islamists.
The government has to explain when the intended reforms will take place. Of course, they must be implemented in collaboration with the opposition.
Many say the trigger for the unrest was also economic, especially sharp increases in food prices. Bouteflika says political parties, regardless of whether they are represented in parliament or not, will take part in the process. But he has never talked about changing the government or dissolving the National Assembly, which is dominated by the three parties in the presidential alliance. Perhaps another sign to critics of no real systemic change. The National Front leader, Moussa Touati, has told the coalition government parties that a wider opposition involvement is necessary to urge Bouteflika take decisive reform measures. However, will he gather enough support from the Algerian people? Remains to be seen. Lahab Al-Musari, Press TV, Algiers.
The Egyptian government has issued a stern warning against incitement of sectarian strife in the country. At least 190 people have been detained in connection with deadly clashes between Salafis and Christians in Egypt's capital, Cairo. As our correspondent reports, the detainees will face trial in a military court.
Egyptians woke up to the news of sectarian violence in Cairo's Imbeba district, which left at least 12 people dead and 180 wounded. The violence started after hundreds of Salafists gathered outside the Coptic St. Mina church. They were protesting over allegations that a Christian woman was being held there because she had married a Muslim man and wanted to convert to Islam.
There are anti-revolutionary forces in the form of policemen, businessmen, and others. The ruling military council and the interim government should work together to deal with these elements.
A church and some nearby homes were set on fire, and it took some hours for the army units to bring the situation under control. The army has said that more than 190 people were detained after the clashes and are to face military trials. The Egyptian Prime Minister held an emergency meeting with his cabinet. After the cabinet crisis talks, the Justice Minister said Egypt will use an iron hand against those trying to sow unrest.
Those behind the clashes will face justice. There are specific laws and retribution for those who attack others.
Egyptians condemned the deadly violence as details of the events unfolded. In solidarity with the victims of the violence, both Egyptian Copts and Muslims staged sit-ins in front of the Supreme Court and then converged at the state TV headquarters, known as Maspiro, to voice their demands to the army and interim government.
The ruling military council should take the matter seriously, because if extremists take the center stage, Muslims and Christians will be doomed.
This was not the first outbreak of violence since the fall of Hosni Mubarak in February. In March, 13 people died in similar clashes in another neighborhood in Cairo. Egyptians have come together to defy what they see as attempts against their revolution, freedom, and country stability. They demand of the army and the interim government to take decisive measures against those unidentified forces that have been seeking to create tension in the country. Mike Amin, Press TV, Cairo.
Fresh reports show U.S. and Canadian companies are helping Arab regimes stifle dissent through internet censorship. Reports say McAfee has provided content filtering software to Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. California-based Blue Coat Systems and Canada's NetSweeper have also sold similar technology to a number of countries, including Yemen. This comes as a regulator in Bahrain says the government is planning to switch to U.S.-based Palo Alto Networks, which has promised more blocking options. Researchers are saying that American technology is among the tools used in the crackdowns on anti-regime protests across the Arab world. The Wall Street Journal has identified the web blocking companies through interviews with people working with internet providers in the region. In Australia, recent riots in refugee detention centers have forced the government to come up with a radical solution that could cost taxpayers $300 million. Our correspondent has the story.
They have come from diverse backgrounds and countries, some fleeing the devastations back home and some for a better future. But contrary to their expectations, they have been kept in detention camps such as this. The controversial fort is home to more than 350 refugees, where a large number of them have been protesting on the rooftops, some resorting to self-harm and some even taking the extreme, committing suicide in an attempt to avoid deportation, provoking support from the social justice advocates.
They know that the government doesn't move unless they will be enforced to do this.
Following the riots that led to the destruction of a number of the buildings in Villawood Detention Centre, three detainees took an 11-day hunger strike on the rooftops of this centre, voicing their discontent with the outcome of their applications to reside in Australia, a scene that fueled the anger of locals, leaving no sympathy.
You know, and I just don't think that those sort of people should be allowed to come here or even stay here. They should be deported right away.
The Australian government has a zero-tolerance policy against this type of behaviour, and that is behave or be detained indefinitely. On the other hand, refugee advocates are reiterating about the poor condition of the refugees, something that they believe is contributing to the obstructive behaviour of the refugees.
It's a range of factors. In Christmas Island, it was about overcrowding. We were seeing a situation where around 1,000 people over what the centre was built for were being housed in conditions that just were intolerable.
In a desperate bid on Saturday, the Australian government reached an agreement with Malaysia to send 800 asylum seekers to Malaysia in exchange for 4,000 genuine refugees, a deal that will cost the Gillard government $300 million over 4 years.
We will take people from the front of the queue, people who are already in Malaysia and already processed as refugees.
Ms. Gillard also acknowledged that she is looking for alternate offshore processing centres such as the one in Papua New Guinea. Malaysia is not a signatory to the UN Refugee Convention, a controversial deal that, according to activists, would only delay the prolonged processing of refugees even more, leaving little faith in their hope for their future. Hamid Fajrullahi, Press TV, Sydney.
And the last item on today's bulletin, surgeons in Iran have participated in an annual congress discussing medical care and insurance. Our Tehran correspondent Amir Mehdi Kazemi has the story.
It is the biggest surgical gathering in Iran, held by the Iranian Association of Surgeons. These doctors have gathered in the 35th Annual Congress of Iranian Surgeons to discuss issues related to their work. For younger doctors, the event is a chance to meet with some of the best veteran surgeons in the country.
One of the things we do during the Congress is to put forward a number of surgical cases, and we ask everybody to participate in solving it. This could be a good training opportunity for our surgeons in the country.
According to the IAS, Iran is one of the leading countries in the world in conducting advanced surgeries.
Today, I think every advanced surgical procedure is available, and nobody has to go abroad seeking for medical treatment.
Iran has become one of the surgical hubs in Asia. Many hospitals in the country are now receiving so-called tourist patients from abroad. Despite all these advantages, Iran's healthcare system is facing a number of challenges.
Every year, a group of elite surgeons from across the country gather in this annual congress in order to discuss the latest issues and challenges related to doctors and their patients. One of the main points this year was regarding insurance companies and their policies in Iran. Doctors believe that these companies have to do more regarding their payments to doctors and clinics, and at the same time, giving wider and better services to patients.
The IAS says that the insurance companies must cover an average 70% of the patient's medical costs in Iran, but figures show that only 30% of the patient's costs are covered by these companies.
Despite our efforts, insurance officials were not immediately available for a comment.
I think the best solution for the economic relationship between the medical profession and the people is insurance. But our insurances are mostly incompetent, and this is a big problem.
Doctors say that their share from the national income is low and that people would have to pay more than they should to receive medical services because their insurance coverage is mainly low. They say their insurance paychecks come late and certain fields like psychiatry are not covered at all.
Recent science is trying to increase the amount of emotional support you get the medical services. But when it comes to the payment, comes to the insurance coverage, all of a sudden you have the problem.
In this year's Congress, IAS members expressed hope that the government would give more support to insurance companies in a way that financial issues would no longer hinder the process of medical care between doctors and patients. Amir Mehdi Kazemi, Press TV, Tehran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Thank you for watching. The news in brief in less than 4 minutes.